Hello, this is Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, April 10th, 2025. There's a photo on the front page of the News Gazette with the headline, Job Well Done, and the caption is, At St. Thomas More, the cast of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown knocked it out of the park during last weekend's spring musical performances in Champaign. And then another picture below, at Oakland, senior Amaya Duzen's volleyball singing day ceremony included students in a kindergarten class. She volunteered to help teach the younger kids making signs of appreciation. University of Illinois, some students' visas revoked without notice. Those affected urged to work with officials to find way to finish degrees. Amid a federal crackdown, some international students at the University of Illinois have begun to see their immigration status terminated without notice. University spokeswoman Robin Kaler said that students at many higher education institutions, including the U of I, are being affected by no-contact terminations. Out of student privacy concerns, we are not sharing specific information, but we are working directly with affected students to help them connect with appropriate resources and understand their options, she said. According to the Department of Homeland Security, there are more than 53,000 active international students in the state of Illinois. A student's F1 or J1 status can be canceled by federal agencies or the school for a variety of reasons, including an individual changing their status or failing to maintain status requirements. Chancellor Robert Jones and Provost John Coleman wrote in a recent letter to the university community. The federal government does not proactively notify the university of no-contact terminations, and the U of I does not have the authority to reverse those actions, Jones and Coleman said. However, the university's International Student and Scholar Services regularly monitors individuals' immigration statuses during the Student Exchange and Visitor Information System. When a status is terminated for any reason by either a federal agency or the school, ISSS directly communicates with the individual to provide details and options specific to the individual's unique situation, the university official said. Jones and Coleman went on to say that students whose immigration status has been terminated should consider making plans as these terminations do not include a grace period. They added that affected students are encouraged to speak with their departments about alternative ways of completing their degrees, including online learning. If an impacted individual is engaged in research as part of their academic program, colleges and departments should support the transition of research responsibilities within the lab or department in compliance with all applicable research best practices, Jones and Coleman continued. They added that affected graduate students should consult with their advisors about any material they want to take overseas to ensure they do not violate export rules or the U of I's policy on data. As for university staff, individuals without valid immigration status must cease employment immediately, they said. The entire letter, which includes a list of legal resources for those wishing to stay in the country and a link to a frequently asked questions page, can be found at blogs.illinois.edu/view-7559/. We know it is unsettling for anyone whose immigration status is revoked, and we are working to provide the resources and support to navigate the situation, Jones and Coleman wrote. The U of I has also joined the President's Alliance on Higher Education and Immigration in condemning the apprehension and detention of international students, said officials with International Student and Scholar Services. Former Chanute dorms to finally be demolished. Prep work has begun on the four buildings. For decades, they were the home of military personnel until Chanute Air Force Base was shuttered. Since 1993, however, a three-story, 1,000-person dorm and three smaller dorms have sat vacant, slowly deteriorating. That's about to change. Work is underway for the building's demolition. Fencing was erected around the property in the 300 block of West Flessner Avenue in March, and a preparatory work has begun on the interior. The state is finally taking the initiative on their property next to Lincoln's Challenge Academy and Rantoul said Rantoul Urban Planning Manager Chris Milliken. The 1,000-person dorm stands north across Flessner from the Hat Parker Family Aquatic Center. The three smaller buildings are located behind it. Lieutenant Colonel Brad Layton, Director of Public Relations for the Illinois National Guard, said the Illinois Capital Development Board is overseeing the work. After the water has been drained from the basements, Layton said, and work is ongoing to take out all the windows, a project that is 90% complete in Building 1 and the three smaller buildings. The three smaller buildings should be completely demolished 3 to 4 months from now, Layton said. P.J. Hoare, a Normal-based commercial contractor, was awarded the contract on the $5 million project. Layton said a February 2026 completion date has been set. Included in the job is remediation of hazardous material. They had a lot of asbestos abatement to do there, Milliken said. They have started the abatement work. A large stack of furniture was piled west of one building last week. Milliken said the property was replatted and surveyed in 2019. I don't see any prior owners, he said, scanning property documents. Milliken said former state Representative Mike Marone and his successor, Representative Brandon Schweitzer, who represent the Rantoul area, sought to appropriate funds for the demolitions. Milliken said that as he understands it, the Air Force made the land available for the Department of Military Affairs to build the current Lincoln's Challenge Academy in exchange for the department's agreement to demolish the dorms. With one closure came one opening. The academy opened in 1993, the same year Chanute closed. The academy operated in antiquated former Air Force buildings until the new campus could be constructed. Those older buildings have since been demolished. Milliken said he doesn't believe the Department of Military Affairs has any plans for the land where the dorms currently sit, other than clearing the property. Obviously, it would give them space to add on in the future, he said. From a village perspective, it would be nice to see the buildings go because you had to stare at them when you were coming and going from the aquatic center. In October 2023, in a ceremony at Rantoul Village Hall, Air Force officials marked the complete transfer of 2,200 acres of the former Air Force base to the community. The base, originally known as Chanute Field, was established May 23, 1927, when the U.S. government leased 640 acres of agricultural land in Rantoul to build an aviation field to train pilots for World War I. Champaign County Community Coalition, Police Chiefs, 2025's homicide rate, a local cause for concern. After multiple years of declining rates of gun violence in Champaign-Urbana, law enforcement leadership is concerned about the first few months of 2025. Urbana has had 6 homicides, which is a lot for a city this size, Police Chief Larry Boone told the Champaign County Community Coalition on Wednesday. On the other hand, he said, his officers are skilled in de-escalating incidents and making arrests without using deadly force. We have to date five incidents where we could have taken life. It would have been lawful, he said. I can tell you where I'm from, they'd have been shot. I know the caliber of officers we have here. They patrol with a position of compassion. Champaign Police Chief Tim Tyler gave credit to his officers for the same abilities. He said that during a recent incident, police were called to a major intersection in town where a man was pointing a weapon at passing motorists. On scene, officers confirmed that the man was, in fact, holding a real weapon. They also determined that based on their training, they would have been justified in using deadly force. Officers went up there. Yes, they were tactical, but I'm happy to report that they didn't use any deadly force, Tyler said. At the end of April, in my 32nd year as a cop, I've never seen that type of policing before. Tyler said at least one of the officers on the scene didn't share the chief's own military background, which helps him handle extreme situations. He had been a waiter before joining the Champaign Police Department. Tyler said that on the other hand, he wasn't right after his own military experience and would not have recovered without the support of family, friends, and counseling. So now I'm worried about my police officers, Tyler said. It's very important that you know that your police officers are experiencing a very hard time. Champaign has had 3 homicides this year. The police chiefs spoke Wednesday as part of a panel on civility, compassion, climate, and violent crime in the area. Jorge Elvir, communication relations manager in the City of Champaign's Equity and Engagement Department, used some of his time as the panel to highlight the work of justice victim advocates who help victims and those close to them deal with the aftermath of a crime. That might mean navigating the court system or finding counseling, or it might mean obtaining food and housing. Elver said violence in the community won't be solved until its root causes are addressed. We can't just look at the data as the numbers, he said. We have to aggregate that data and see that there's human, society, community behind those numbers. He highlighted poverty, racism, lack of education, underserved schools, and general access to guns as primary causes for gun violence. Karen Sims, program director for the CU Trauma and Resilience Initiative, said much of the conversation was referring to stress, which can lead people to lash out and be violent. She said stress levels were raised by the pandemic, but that the people working to address these issues also have a high level of stress as their work is debated in public. For example, homelessness advocates might be affected by debates over whether to assist unhoused people. Sims advocated for more support for youth and families, but especially for support of 18 to 34 demographics, which is said is the source of a lot of gun violence, has been very few dedicated resources. She also asked anyone listening who has access to guns to lock them up. If everybody made a commitment to making sure that people did not have access to your guns, that would make a difference, Sims said. If I can just remove a trigger, I might be helping make the community safer in the long run. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. In an appearance on WHMS, If an appearance on WHMS didn't convince C.J. Pusey that being part of our Farm Family of the Week of 2025 was a big deal, a visit to Casey's in his hometown of Catlin did the trick. On Wednesday morning, Pusey popped in to buy print editions that included a feature on his family's rich farming history. There he was given the celebrity treatment by staff who already had read the News Gazette. They knew I was in it, he said. It was a fantastic start to the 5th year of our popular Farm Family of the Week, which will publish Wednesdays into October. It includes a Q&A with ag writer Dave Hinton and a live interview with Mike Hale on 97.5 FM. To listen to Pusey's 12-minute chat, visit newsgazette.com for the Farbcast. Have a farm family to nominate? Simply reach out to Hinton at dhinton@newsgazette.com, and he'll take it from there. The teacher of the week is Alicia Leigh Von Bodeman, 5th grade Robeson Elementary School, Champaign, playing to their strengths. Growing up in Champaign, Alicia Leigh Von Bodeman was told by multiple educators that she had what it took to become a teacher. Despite dismissing those suggestions at the time, she eventually pursued the profession. In 2008, 8 years into her teaching career, the Champaign Central graduate moved with her family back to her hometown, where she's been teaching ever since. She's taught since first grade in Richmond, and this year she filled a need for the school by moving into a 5th grade classroom. I find my work important because it is. We help students realize their strengths, academically of course, but also emotionally and socially. Teachers facilitate learning and empower students to ask questions, take risks, and find interests, and most importantly, fail forward. When students can fail and recover, it is one of the most important skills they'll ever learn. I became a teacher because there were people in my life who saw something in me that at the time I could not. My 7th grade teacher, Barbara Yount, told me that I could be a teacher when I was in high school. Of course, being a typical high schooler, I dismissed her insight without much thought. Later, my counselor, Brad Hastings, suggested I pursue a degree in education. It wasn't until I started taking classes in education that I truly realized that what they had suggested for me. I can honestly say that I love what I do, which I know is a gift and a privilege. My favorite or most unique lesson that I teach is, when I was the enrichment teacher, I created an end-of-the-year engineering design project for my 5th graders. My students worked in small groups to design and build a mini golf course for a full 18-hole miniature golf course. Each hole had a theme and obstacles to make it challenging. At the end of the project, the entire school came out to play the course, as well as our then superintendent, Susan Zola, and some members of our Board of Education. It was one of my favorite lessons, and many of my former students still talk about it. My most fulfilling moments on the job are when a student has a moment of triumph after a struggle. There is nothing better than standing back, allowing a child to find their way through a problem with full faith that their success is imminent. It can be so tempting to step in to help sometimes, and there are certainly moments that I must. When a student perseveres through frustration or after failure, there's nothing better. It's hard not to bask in their glow when that happens. I keep students engaged by staying connected. Students love to feel a connection with me, a connection with each other, a connection with experiences or memories. I share anecdotes in lessons that I know will hook them in because they'll want to share their own connection. They want to feel seen and feel heard as much as they want to feel a connection to what they're learning. I give them opportunities to share their connections, and this helps them stay engaged. This is something I learned from my mentor, Dr. Mike Martin, who was my principal at Kingsley in Evanston. Something else I'm passionate about is my family. My parents, Lou and Mary Lee, are in their 90s, live independently, and are very active. We get to see them often and love them dearly. Our daughters, Kate and Ellie, are juniors at Central, and our son Max is a sophomore at Colorado State University. My husband, Akeem, and I spend a lot of time watching the girls play soccer with Central, Illinois FC, or at Soccer Planet, of which we are co-owners. We enjoy traveling, but have spent more time visiting Fort Collins, Colorado, since our son moved out there. I also take voice lessons with Ryan Groff at Perennial Sound once a week, which I love doing. My favorite teacher and subject to study in school was Rosemary Costello, fifth grade at Holy Cross School, and Sally Pilcher, creative writing at Champaign Central High School. Illinois General Assembly, bill banning dwarfism slur as team name passes House. The House passed a bill this week that would ban public schools from using team names that discriminate against people with disabilities. The bill, if signed into law, currently would affect just one high school in St. Clair County. Freeburg Community High School's nickname, the Midgets, is considered a slur for people with dwarfism. The school's administration did not reply to a request for comment. Under Bill 3527, the school could continue using uniforms or other materials it bought before the bill was passed until September 1, 2028, as long as it picks a new nickname. The bill doesn't clarify the repercussions, if any, for not changing the name. According to the school's website, the nickname was chosen in the 1930s after a reporter used it to describe the basketball team, whose tallest member was just 5 feet 10 inches tall. The bill's main sponsor, State Representative Maurice West, Democrat of Rockford, said the name was chosen during a time when freak shows, the exhibitions of human abnormalities, were popular. School alumni and community members, along with activists and organizations, filed almost 1,000 witness slips to the General Assembly for and against the bill. Opponents said the school's nickname is a tradition, and there aren't any students with dwarfism in the school who might be affected by it. However, Shelby Holloway, a woman with dwarfism and a national advocate and co-director of Mascots Matter, said students at Freeburg aren't the only ones affected by the name. This is a statewide issue, and it deserves a statewide solution, Holloway said. The Freeburg mascot does not just affect the students who attend that school. Every time a Freeburg sports team travels, its mascot's name is displayed in the schools across Illinois. Illinois Manufacturing Association contest. Refill pump for firefighters' helicopters is 2025 coolest thing made in Illinois. Governor J.B. Pritzker announced the sixth annual winner of the Maker's Madness contest Wednesday in Springfield. Chosen in a bracket-style competition from a field of more than 250 products, MTH Pump's Aerial Firefighting Helicopter Refill Pump is the 2025 coolest thing made in Illinois. It was designed to cut in half the refill time of water tanks used on helicopters to fight fires, taking as little as 30 seconds to refill. The contest is organized annually by the Illinois Manufacturers Association, a trade group that lobbies lawmakers in Springfield. The product was used by fire departments in California to fight wildfires in January. Tim Tremaine, president of MTH Pumps, said the Los Angeles Fire Department praised the pumps, calling it very consistent, very helpful, and very reliable out in the field. MTH Pumps is a family-owned and operated business based in Plano that was started in 1965 by Tremaine's grandfather, Dave Tremaine, whom he thanked during the ceremony. "What's cool about it is the fact that we built it from scratch ourselves," he said. "We designed it from the ground up and produced it ourselves right here in Illinois. And just the fact that these pumps are flying all around the world fighting fires is really an amazing thing to think about." Other finalists included an aircrew systems tester made by Chemring Energetic Devices of Downers Grove, donor breast milk distributed by Mother's Milk Vision of Western Great Lakes of Elk Grove Village, and a remote-controlled oil skimmer made by Elastec of Carmi. Pritzker praised Rivian's award winners during the ceremony, including Rivian's R1T, the first all-electric truck in production, General Mills' Fruit by the Foot, Mullen's imitation French dressing, and a mining truck manufactured by Komatsu that features a hauling capacity of up to 400 tons. "For generations, Illinois has been a place where things get made," Pritzker said. "From John Deere and the first steel plow in Grand Detour to Josephine Cochran and the first dishwasher in Shelbyville to Martin Cooper and the first cell phone in Schaumburg, so much of the world as we know it right now was made here in Illinois." Tariffs paused, except versus China. "I thought the people jumping a little bit out of line," Trump says regarding his sudden about face. President Donald Trump announced a 90-day pause on higher reciprocal tariffs that hit dozens of trade partners after midnight while raising duties on China to 125%. The president's about-face comes roughly 13 hours after higher reciprocal duties on 56 nations and the European Union took effect, fueling market turmoil and stoking recession fears. Trump came under massive pressure from business leaders and investors to reverse course. "I thought that people were jumping a little bit out of line," Trump told reporters at the White House on Wednesday when asked why he backed off. "They were getting a little bit yippy, a little bit afraid." Stocks surged the most since 2020 on Trump's abrupt announcement, with the S&P 500 index rising over 8%, with almost every company gaining and the tech-heavy NASDAQ 100 jumping the most since 2008. Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated economists rescinded their forecast for a U.S. recession. Bonds eased on early sell-off, but remained down across maturities for a third day. Trump was looking at the bond market as he made his decision, he told reporters. "The bond market is very tricky," the president said. "I was watching it, but if you look at it now, it's beautiful, the bond market right now. But I saw last night where people were getting a little queasy." Countries that were hit with the higher reciprocal duties that went into effect Wednesday will now be taxed at the earlier 10% baseline rate applied to other nations, with the exception of China, according to a White House official. Trump said on social media that more than 75 countries had contacted his administration to negotiate on trade barriers and have not, at my strong suggestion, retaliated in any way, shape, or form. "I've authorized a 90-day pause and a substantially lowered reciprocal tariff during this period of 10%, also effective immediately," Trump posted on his social media site. The president also said he is going to take a look at tariff exemptions for some U.S. companies and will decide on instinct. Some companies, through no fault of their own, happen to be in an industry that's more affected. "You have to be able to show a little flexibility, and I'm able to do that," Trump said. Trump's decision to raise import taxes even further on China came after Beijing announced plans to retaliate with an 84% duty on American goods set to begin Thursday. The Trump administration has taken particular aim at China over its trade practices and its combative approach to the president's tariff plans. Based on the lack of respect that China has shown to the world's markets, I am hereby raising the tariff charged to China by the United States of America to 125%, effective immediately, Trump said in a social media post. The president later Wednesday predicted Chinese President Xi Jinping or his team would come to the table for negotiations despite their defiant posture. President Xi is a proud man, I know very well, and they don't know quite how to go about it, but they'll figure it out in the process of figuring it out. But they want to make a deal, he said. Trump cast his sweeping tariffs as a powerful tool to revive domestic manufacturing and grow the U.S. economy, promising new factories and jobs in America. Yet the rapid shift in strategy raises questions about whether that remains the president's goal and how he plans to achieve it. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent on Wednesday announced the turnabout as a victory for Trump, telling reporters the president created maximum negotiating leverage for himself in talks with other nations. He said he would be speaking to officials from Vietnam, Japan, India, and South Korea in the coming days. It took great courage for him to stay the course until this moment, Bessent said at the White House. This was his strategy all along. Mideast conflict, at least 23 killed in Israeli strike on Gaza apartments. Israeli aircraft struck a residential block in war-ravaged northern Gaza on Wednesday, killing at least 23 people, health officials said, as the renewed fighting in the devastated Palestinian enclave showed no signs of slowing. The Al-Ahli Hospital said at least 23 people were killed in the strike, including 8 women and 8 children. The territory's health minister confirmed the figures. The strike hit a 4-story building in the Shihaja neighborhood of Gaza City, and rescue teams were searching for victims under the rubble, according to the health ministry's emergency service. The Civil Defense, a rescue group that operates under the Hamas-run government, said other neighboring buildings were damaged in the strike. The Israeli military said it struck a senior Hamas militant who it said was behind attacks emanating from Shihaja, but it didn't name him or provide further details. Israel blames the deaths of Palestinian civilians on the militant group because it embeds itself in dense urban areas. As it ratchets up pressure on Hamas to agree to be free to free hostages, Israel has issued sweeping evacuation orders for parts of Gaza, including Shihaja. It imposed a blockade on food, fuel, and humanitarian aid that has left civilians facing acute shortages as supplies dwindle. It has pledged to seize large parts of the Palestinian territory and establish a new security corridor through it. The UN said the Israeli military has denied aid workers permission for more than 2/3 of 170 attempts to move humanitarian supplies within the Gaza Strip since the ceasefire ended. UN spokesperson Stephanie Dujarric said efforts to get dwindling aid supplies to Palestinians were severely strained. The Israeli military did not immediately comment. Earlier this week, Hamas fired its strongest volley of rockets since the ceasefire collapsed, lobbing 10 projectiles toward the southern Israel. Israel resumed its war against Hamas in Gaza last month after an 8-week ceasefire collapsed. The ceasefire brought a much-needed reprieve from the fighting to war-weary Palestinians in Gaza and sent an infusion of humanitarian aid to the territory. It also led to the release of 25 living Israeli hostages held in Gaza and the return of the remains of 8 others in exchange for hundreds of Palestinian prisoners. Mediators have since attempted to bring the sides to a bridging agreement that would again pause the war, free hostages, and open the door for talks on the war's end, something Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said he won't agree to until Hamas is defeated. Hamas wants the war to end before it frees the remaining 59 hostages it holds, 24 of whom are believed to be alive. The war was sparked by Hamas's October 7, 2023, attacks on southern Israel. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, April 10, 2025. Please stay tuned for Part 2.